I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and this is Up to Date. Algae and chicken poop may not be typical conversation around the dinner table, but in the world of alternative energy, they are very hot topics. They join the likes of wind and solar as possible sources of renewable fuel. Finding alternatives for oil and gas continues to be a headlong pursuit. This hour we'll get an update on where we stand in the rush to find new fuel that is cheap, not damaging to the earth, and can be produced in the kinds of massive quantities this country needs. Today, the Director of Energy Science and Technology at one of the nation's leading research organizations and a Kansas City Star reporter talk with us about what's next for renewable fuel. It's Up to Date, following this hour's news. Welcome to Up to Date. I'm Steve Kraske. Chicken poop isn't what it used to be, which is just poop. And algae these days is a lot more than just pond scum. In the world of alternative energy these days, poop, algae, wind, and solar are very hot topics. Which one may, in the long run, prove to be the most successful commercially remains to be seen. But we do know that finding alternatives for oil and gas continues to be a headlong pursuit. Today we'll get an update on where we stand in the rush to find new fuel that is cheap, not damaging to the earth, and can be produced in the kinds of massive quantities we need to make this country go. With us today is Dr. Stan Bull. He's Director of Energy Science and Technology at MRI Global, based in Kansas City. Dr. Bull joins us this morning from Denver. And Dr. Bull, nice to have you. Good morning.
Thank you. Yes, it's snowing in Denver today, in fact.
Well, I'm sorry for you. We're still clear out here. And also with us here in the studio is a star, Steve Everly. He covers energy issues for the newspaper. And, Steve, always good to have you, too.
Thanks for having me, Steve.
Well, I think, most people, Stan, have a general feel for wind and solar power, but algae and chicken poop is going to be something of a surprise. I was looking at an algae exhibit when Senator Claire McCaskill visited MRI Global just a few weeks ago and was wondering, what in the world is this? I mean, algae as an alternative fuel? On the surface, Stan, that doesn't seem to make a whole lot of sense.
Well, algae, very interesting. The first thing I want to say is that they are plants and not animals, so we're not growing little beasts that we end up having to sacrifice to extract material from them. It turns out that algae do have a couple of characteristics that are very exciting. One is they grow very rapidly, so that they grow at a much higher rate than your typical crops, corn, soybeans, etc. And secondly, they are able to accumulate a large fraction of their body weight, or their cell weight, if you will, to be oil. And then that oil can be converted into a diesel fuel, very much like soybean oil can be converted into a diesel fuel.
Yeah, I'm not sure I get that, Stan. Just take it one step farther for me. How do you get oil out of algae? Where's the oil?
It's a single-cell plant, and they grow in an aquatic environment, that is, in a pond. And so your characterization of pond scum is right on. Effectively, it's pond scum, and they grow naturally. But there are many different species. Some of them are much better at growing more green stuff, and others are very good at growing, storing up oil. And in effect, if you think about it, they are behaving as if winter's coming and they're trying to store up energy, and they store it in the form of oil. And it's within that cell, and you simply break the cell and extract it. That's oversimplification.
Yeah,
that's
sure.
Basically.
And I appreciate that. Well, Steve Everly, just so we're clear here, this has already happened, right? I mean, scientists have actually produced fuel from algae. This isn't a theory. We actually know it can happen.
Yeah, I believe there's some, there have been some, obviously, some laboratory tests are doing it. I believe some small pilot projects are doing it, too. They're still a ways off from doing it on a commercial scale, and I think there's still some issues that they have to deal with. But I know in talking to people in the energy field that this algae is something that, to use an overused phrase, is really could be a game changer. I mean, it could produce tremendous amounts of fuel, and as Stan said, you know, this is renewable stuff, so it would be a big deal.
Stan, a game changer, does that sum it up pretty well?
It does. We need to remember that it's down the road. It's not here today in a commercial scale. There are a lot of startup companies that are having a go at it. And the other thing I should characterize these algae as, there are many factories. They not only produce oil, but they can produce various pharmaceuticals, nutraceuticals, animal feed. So we use everything that they do produce, and the ultimate game is to get the maximum value out of them and at the same time produce fuel that we can use primarily for transportation purposes.
And Stan, the ultimate potential here is what with algae? What could it mean 20, 25 years down the road?
It could be an enormous quantity. It's hard to claim, I think, that any biomass-based fuel production facility operation ultimately deployed widespread across the United States is going to be able to displace all of our current petroleum. Hmm. That's an enormous quantity, and it's an enormous challenge to do something like it. But it'll make a large dent, very large dent.
I mean, like 30%, 10%?
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, okay.
No, it could be in the 30% range in principle.
Yeah. Well, Steve Everly, it turns out that, and who would have thunk it, that Missouri is a good place to produce algae. Why is that?
Well, yeah, and in fact, I believe Midwest Research, or I guess they go by MRI Global now, has actually come out with some reports lately showing that that especially in the Boot Hill, there's a tremendous reserves of water, which are needed to grow the algae. And according to the people, a lot of people, it would be a terrific place to start an industry, and mm-hmm. that really has some potential.
Stan, would you grow this algae in nature, or would you grow it under a confined area where you control the environment?
Well, the jury's still out on that. There are some startup companies that are betting their future on some kind of a contained system of hanging plastic bags, for example. I think generally the prevailing notion is that the least expensive a facility that you can envision is probably the right thing. And so what that idea is raceway ponds, shallow ponds that are in the form of a raceway. They need to be stirred to keep the algae near the surface so that they can be absorbing the sunlight. It's harder to control those kind. There's invasion of foreign species, ones that mm-hmm. grow naturally, and they might overtake the ones that you're trying to use to produce what you want. So it's still up in the air. Jury's still out on that.
Is it possible then, Stan, that Missouri could wind up being one of the top two or three states in the country when it comes to producing algae if, in fact, this technology continues to take off?
I'm not sure I would give it the top two or three, but they could be in the business in a substantial way. States like Florida that has a substantial amount of sunlight, a lot of water, and relatively flat land would be hard to certainly get ahead of a state like that. And there's other states. The desert Southwest is a good place to grow algae if you have enough water. Mm-hmm. And what you have to rely on in environments like that is saline water that's not useful for other purposes. And algae, there are saltwater species and there are freshwater species. So it's certainly possible to think about growing algae in saltwater environments.
If you're just joining us this morning, you're listening to Up to Date, and we're talking about this new wave of alternative energy sources that are out there. We're talking about algae right now. Steve Everly, I guess Stan's already referred to this, but this idea that algae could be an answer. The trick here is finding a way to produce it in enough quantities to make it commercially viable, right? That's sort of where we stand.
That's right. I think arguably this is the biggest issue facing most of renewable energy now is getting it up to commercial scale.
We know we can do it. You can make oil from algae, but can you do it in a big enough quantity?
And cellulosic ethanol is really a good example of what's going on. Almost all ethanol now is made from corn. But the future of that particular niche of the energy market is going to be able to make it out of other stuff, wood scraps and grasses and things like that. And they pretty much know how to do that now. In fact, three or four years ago, people were saying, well, the science is pretty well done and we can move on to commercial applications. Well, the economy got in the way of some of that, but there's still some real issues on getting to commercial scale. You know, it can take millions of acres of biomass really to do this at the volume that they're going to do, the transportation of these grasses, the cost of that. So there are some serious issues to deal with, and it's not easy.
Is there enough research being done right now, Stan, to sort of help bolster this fledgling producing fuel from algae industry that's out there? What needs to happen that's not, I guess, is what I'm wondering.
Well, first of all, I'm a science and technology guy, so I'll always advocate for more.
Sure.
I'm a major believer in technology. But yes, there does need to be not only more fundamental research, but also making that transition from the laboratory to pilot scale and ultimately to commercial scale. We still do not have in the United States, or any place else, by the way, a commercial scale cellulose ethanol plant. There are pilot plants and there are commercial scale that are being built, and we expect to see them in operation maybe possibly 2012, but certainly 2013 we're expecting. So that'll start to make some adequate demonstration that it's viable.
Well, why isn't there a bigger plant available and up and running already?
Well, first of all, it always takes longer to do things. This is a basic rule of life, I think. It always takes longer to
yes.
do things than you think it's going to. We've had aggressive goals, but the funding has not been able to move us along as rapidly as we had hoped it would. And part of it is it was more complicated, and we find things that surprise us. And so it's taken a while to overcome that.
And Stan, what is MRI Global doing right now when it comes to studying the potential of algae specifically as an alternative fuel?
Well, of course, we did the study for Missouri, and that was just an evaluation of potential. But the primary thing that MRI Global, and it's in their Florida operation more so than in, but we also have a closed bioreactor in the Missouri area. But our focus is more on the harvesting, evaluation of species, how does this particular species perform? What are its characteristics? What kind of products can we get from it? And then how do you harvest them?
Mm-hmm.
Because they're in a water environment, and the water generally gets in the way, so you have to separate them and then also separate the products. And it's the whole chemistry related to that separation process.
How do you harvest algae that's grown in a natural environment? How do you get it?
Well, you can use a strain or screens and collect it, and then separate the water. In other words, you just separate it like you would coffee grounds in a coffee cup, let's say, put it through some kind of a mesh screen. But there's various ways that are being tried, including centrifuges and absorbents and other approaches. Generally, you don't try to heat them because that may destroy the character of the materials that the algae have managed to accumulate.
Yeah. Okay, if you're listening to us today, it's Up to Date on KCUR. And if you have a question about alternative energy, we're open for business right now. 816-235-2888 is our phone number, our email address, uptodate@kcur.org, or go to KCUR's Facebook page or tweet us at KCUR Up to Date. Let's go to some calls here. Susan from Kansas City North, good morning.
Good morning. Being originally from California, water is a big concern for me, and I am so excited about the idea of using algae for energy production, because algae purifies the water. In fact, in New York City, they're doing studies of cleaning wastewater, sewage water, with algae rather than chemical-type stuff. But the point being, I'm so excited about this because this would be a way to produce energy and still allow us to have water that is potable, which is not replaceable, versus fracking, where they put a bunch of poisons into the water, and then it's lost to us. So I'm really excited about this, and I urge everybody to let their their elected representatives know about this, especially in Kansas, where they're talking about, you know, letting fracking go through without any big deal, because
I think that's happening already in South Central Kansas, Susan, if I understand right.
Oh, I know. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Kansas is already losing water because in areas where they were able to grow corn previously, they're now having to switch to lower water crops like cotton.
Hmm. All right, Susan, thank you for the phone call. I appreciate it.
Mm-hmm. Bye.
Let's go to Joe from Overland Park. Joe, you're on Up to Date. Good morning.
Good morning, and thanks for taking the call. I'd like to find out if you're going to consider energy storage, which most people agree now has the greatest potential for accelerating the development of renewable energy projects.
Steve?
Well, that's certainly an issue with a lot, you know, with solar and wind, and that's what they're working on to get. My understanding is that is something else that's still a ways off.
But, actually storing the energy we're talking about
yeah,
that's produced
right,
by
right.
these
and
new
being
ways.
Able to, yeah. You know, and then use it later or mm-hmm. when you need it. And there's no doubt, though, that would be a big deal.
Dr. Stan Bull, can you add anything to that?
Sure. Certainly on the fuel side, the fuel itself is the storage medium, and so storage with biofuels, ethanol, and that sort of thing is not an issue. It's on the electricity side that where particularly at large scale, utility scale electric storage that we don't have a good answer. It's unfortunately that kind of storage has been somewhat quite a bit neglected in terms of research. It is now being emphasized more completely,
yeah.
And so hopefully there'll be some answers down the road. But it's a major issue right now.
Steve, I wanted to give our listeners a sense of just what kind of potential LG has, and I'm quoting something here that you wrote in the newspaper. What gets observers especially excited, you wrote, about LG is that it can produce vastly more oil than plants, an estimated 3,000 gallons per acre of crop, more than 30 times what soybeans can produce, and some LG strains can more than double their weight in just a few hours in the right circumstances. So I'm wondering, you know, 3,000 gallons an acre sounds like a lot. In fact, is it really?
Well, it is. But, you know, the specific numbers kind of vary depending on what you're talking about and whatever. But there's no doubt that it's much more efficient than the other things we've been talking about or the biomass, like, you know, growing grass or whatever. But that's the sort of thing that when people start talking about saying, you know, if they can really crack this and make this work, it would be a very significant advance. One other thing I'd like to mention, too, and perhaps Stan can expand on this a little bit, but airlines are very interested in this work done on algae as well. You know, one of the issues they have is weight. And so when you talk about, say, ethanol and whatever, it's not something that they can really use all that much because, you know, it takes more ethanol to have the same amount of energy as an equivalent unit of a petroleum. So they're interested in an alternative that kind of copies, petroleum as far as, you know, the amount of energy it has per unit. And as I understand it, Stan, algae does have some possibilities on that.
That's exactly right, and your point about the airlines are very keen on the future of an algae biofuel, and so not only that, so is the Air Force and DOD, the Department of Defense, all the services in general, because they're heavily dependent on diesel or jet fuel, and they need something that they can count on in the future, and.
Mm-hmm.
Even when they fuel up in Afghanistan or other countries, they need to have fuels that are compatible and consistent with the kind of specs that they're accustomed to. So it's an enormous challenge as we move forward trying to come up with a fuel that will ultimately substitute for jet fuel.
You know, Stan, along those lines, Richard writes us at uptodate@kcur.org, and he sends us this email. I've read that as much as half of our defense budget is basically a subsidy to the oil industry. If this amount of money was put to subsidizing alternative energies, where would we be today?
Further down the road.
Mm-hmm.
But how to be very specific, that's hard to say. Because that is an enormous amount of money. But in fact, the Department of Defense is investing in developing some of these future fuels and engines that will be, tolerate and behave and function well at high efficiency with those kind of fuels.
You know, let's just step back here a moment and look at the overall picture when it comes to this world of alternative fuels. Dr. Bull, speaking very broadly here, just how big a rush is on to find alternative sources of energy right now? I mean, I have this sense that given the cost of a gallon of gas that we're pretty wrapped up in this idea, but is that really what's happening out there?
You know, let me back up first and just remind us that the very first thing we should always think about and do is look for energy efficiency measures, more efficient ways to use it. We waste in the United States and worldwide approximately two-thirds of the energy that we start with. In other words, we start with coal, we start with petroleum. By the time we are having wheels run down the road or electrons in wires, we have lost two-thirds of that energy on the average. So We need to convert what we have much more efficiently. But having said that, we still need to look forward to new sources or new ways to make energy. And, you know, and generally, to keep it simple, I like to look at it as electricity and fuels. And electricity, there's a lot of options. We know about solar. We know about wind. There's also geothermal. And there's wave energy from the ocean. Hydroelectric, and which is exists today and probably is not going to be expanded much. And then the fuel side is more limited. There's really we've talked about cellulosic biomass. Today it's based on ethanol is based on corn, and then algae, and then ultimately down in the long run we may be able to function on a hydrogen economy. And hydrogen, but this is a long-term proposition, and you would use hydrogen in a fuel cell, which has a high efficiency for conversion of hydrogen into electricity, and that could be used both for home use and for automobiles, for example.
You know, Steve Everly, I guess what I'm driving at here is this idea that, you know, so many folks are concerned about this. I have the sense that, you know, is the country making the kind of concerted push to find an alternative to gasoline that you would think? I mean, I remember covering presidential candidates back in like 2000 and 2004, Dick Gephardt talking about an Apollo-style project to develop an alternative to gasoline. I'm just wondering, that really hasn't happened, or has it, and I've missed it?
Well, no, I think you can argue it is happening. You know, one of the frustrating things for people just looking at this is that progress seems to be slow.
Of course.
And then something like low oil prices will come along or something, and all of a sudden people aren't as interested in doing it.
That's right.
Fall. But, you know, there has been progress made, and I think that it's quite possible that our largest consumption of gasoline, petroleum gasoline in this country, happened in 2007, and we'll never use as much gasoline as we used in that year again. And there are already some success stories. I know corn ethanol is much maligned by a lot of people, but you know it's displacing 5% of gasoline supplies now, and it's that sort of progress that happens over many, many years. It takes a lot of patience. Some of the things we're talking about today that are still in the research phase, it's going to take a lot more. So we need some things to help us along here. One alternative that a lot of people don't think of as an alternative, but is natural gas. And it is a fossil fuel. But, you know, we got quite a bit of it. And there are some real indications that it's starting to catch on with commercial fleets. I know AT&T announced recently that it was going to buy a few thousand natural gas vehicles, the largest such order ever made. Uh-huh. And so that sort of bridge, until we get to some of these other things like algae and whatever, I think it will be pretty important.
But Dr. Bull, I had the sense from you a few minutes ago that maybe you thought the commitment to this from the federal government wasn't as large as you think it ought to be.
Well, yes, that's probably a fair summary of what I was trying to convey. But you know, and I don't want to be critical. I think it, you know, we have to have priorities. How the taxes we pay are used. If we really want to dedicate and make that a more robust program, then certainly it would require larger investments in it. But I
guess that begs a question then, Doctor. How big of a hurry do we need to be in these days?
It depends on your priorities, obviously. We certainly don't have a shortage of petroleum, and in fact, we, because of advanced drilling techniques, are finding more petroleum domestically. We aren't importing as much petroleum today as we were a few years ago. But someday we are going to start to run short of it, and we are so accustomed to being able to drive up to the gas service station and fill our tank and with at a reasonably modest cost. I know it doesn't feel that way when we do it, but relatively speaking, it is. So I think that one of the things we really need to do is that the renewable and alternative fuel world needs to do is provide the existing petroleum industry with products that they can integrate well into their system, into mm-hmm. their existing infrastructures and refineries.
Steve?
Yeah, I think one of the important things, in my view anyway, is not to let this drop entirely, which has sort of been the history of this. You know, in 1974, when there was the OPEC oil embargo, it got everyone's attention, and we really got serious, in fuel efficiency and finding some other fuels and really trying to curb our imports. And one of the great forgotten stories in this is that in 8 years, we cut our crude oil imports by 50%. Mm-hmm. And it took like 15 or 20 years before we ever used as much oil as we once did because of the lower oil prices. And what happened during that period is we just let things drop completely. I mean, we didn't worry about fuel efficiency. We dropped a lot of the research. And it just and I think, at least from that regard, there's more going on now than in that period. Mm. So that's why I'm somewhat hopeful.
So in some ways, you're saying the American people, we are our own worst enemies when it comes to the push for alternative fuels. We've let it go a little bit.
Yes, and there's still this problem of the price of petroleum. You know, if it gets around $3 or whatever per gallon, people aren't quite as concerned. You know, they may not buy the hybrid or the electric, the extra
yeah.
cost of that. And there's still some economic issues there. If it doesn't pay back, you know, doing some of these alternatives, then it makes it a lot harder.
And there's already talk I'm hearing, Steve, and you would know this better than I, that the price of a gallon of gas might just be going up as this year progresses.
That's true. And, you know, especially with all the things going in the Middle East now, I mean, if there's any unrest there, it could certainly go up. But, you know, we have been at consistently around $3 or above for quite some time. Last year, even on an inflation-adjusted basis, we paid an average annual price that's never been higher. And so we are paying a lot more. It's just that maybe a little of the volatility that we had in the past is not there. But we're paying a lot more, and so it's time to get serious.
Could gas hit $4 a gallon by come election day, ironically enough?
It's definitely possible, mm-hmm. especially if there's some issues with Iran, and that can definitely be a peak like that.
Okay, let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our good conversation here about alternative energy, and we'll turn to another product that's out there on the horizon, chicken poop. I get to say that word a whole lot more here on the air. Poop, poop, poop. I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and you're listening to Up to Date on KCUR. And welcome back to the second half of Up to Date. I'm Steve Kraske. If you missed yesterday's look at love in the Victorian era and the modern internet dating age, you'll find it in all of our older broadcasts at kcur.org/up-to-date. Tomorrow on the program, we talk with our country's most lethal sniper and then talk about a slightly less lethal defensive method, martial arts. This hour, though, we're talking about alternative energy. We're visiting with Dr. Stan Bull. He's with MRI Global. He's also a director emeritus of the National Renewable Energy Laboratory. He joins us this morning from Denver. And also here with me in the studio is Steve Everly from The Star. He covers energy issues for the newspaper. We're wondering, what do you think? Have the American people been a little lax when it comes to pushing and demanding alternative fuels? Our phone number here, 816-235-2888. Our email address, updatedate@kcur.org, or go to KCUR's Facebook page or tweet us at KCUR UpToDate. Well, let's turn to chicken poop, and why not, right? MRI Global is very much involved with this, too. What can chicken poop become once it's processed? Dan, walk us through that a little bit.
Well, it's a process called anaerobic digestion that is generally in which it's generally used. And there's two main products. One, you actually produce natural gas or methane, and then the remaining materials can become fertilizer substitutions. So it's if you think about how much energy can you get from it, excuse me, all of the if you collect it all, it's not going to actually solve our energy problem, but at the same, it's really a cleanup process, taking care of a waste, and then making beneficial use of it.
Steve Everly, what do you make of the potential for chicken poop?
I think it's basically what Stan said. I mean, it could be a good supplement. I know there are a lot of projects being considered or actually coming close to reality, some pilot projects in Kansas that would use cattle, you know, cattle chips and are converting that. And I know dairy farmers, there's some history there of dairy farmers doing exactly, using digesters and turning that into energy. So there's still some economics involved in getting it done, but it has some potential.
And how does chicken poop compare with algae in terms of having the most potential, Steve? What's your sense?
Algae would by far be where the
focus is.
Right, right. I think that, yeah, for a lot of different reasons. But I think if you're just looking at the total energy picture, I think there's a little more optimism about algae.
Yeah.
You might think about coupling those two because some of the nutrients that results from the chicken poop after you've processed it can be used to grow the algae. So you can combine those systems to some benefit.
You know, that's interesting to say because I had a call a couple of weeks ago from somebody who has fish ponds in mid-Missouri, and they grow fish for pet stores. And he was saying the same thing, and that he could easily, he thought, get into, you know, doing some algae farming.
Hey, how do you collect the chicken poop, Steve, once, you know, you need it to start processing it for fuel? How do you get it?
Well, that's you got to be close to the source, but just in the few people I've talked to about it, there's some issues as far as, the condition it is. If it gets too wet, that can be – well, it depends on a digester. This is not an issue, but I know there's some projects in Kansas where they're burning it, and so the – just how wet it is can be a problem, and it has to be stored under some sort of cover. Mm-hmm. So there are those sort of things that have to be considered.
But again, it strikes me, Stan, again, as we talked about algae, the potential here, being a Midwestern guy, is just enormous for the farmers out here and everything else, right?
Well, they need to make good use of that material, and if it's anything more than just dumping it somewhere, then it it's beneficial and mm-hmm. yes, but it is a local as Steve says, it's a local thing. You don't want to have to haul it 100 miles, so it probably lends itself to smaller operations.
I see. And again, when we talk about quantity, like we were with algae, Steve, just grabbing information from one of your stories, an egg farm near Knobnostor, Missouri, with 2 million chickens produces, and I couldn't believe this, 260 tons of manure a day.
Right. And they're scrambling to find other uses for it. One of the main things so far is being turning it into fertilizer, selling it for people with gardens and things. Yeah. But that's one of the things that really pushes a lot of this development. If you've got some farmers, in this case, farmers who really have a need to get rid of this, and they're very interested in finding some alternatives.
Mm-hmm. How invested is MRI Global in chicken waste, Dr. Bull? What are you seeing there?
Well, we do have an operating system. It's at the field station. It's functioning with feed feeding chicken waste, not chicken waste, chicken manure, mm-hmm. And then to look to utilize it on the, it's a 160-acre test plot area, and so to look to use that materials as fertilizer, substitute for fertilizer, as well as some algae feed as on an experimental basis.
You know, Stan, we're going to talk about solar in just a couple minutes here, but are there other materials out there that people don't commonly think of that, you know, potentially might be turned into great sources of alternative fuel?
Well, there's, of course, all the animal manures from feedlots and that sort of thing, but also wastewater from municipal treatment plants is also something that it's a cleanup challenge, and at the same time has nutrients and things that can be used to ultimately produce energy as well as other products. The word I haven't actually said is biorefinery. We should always be thinking about all of these materials. That includes switchgrass and corn stover and chicken poop, et cetera, as feeding into a biorefinery type operation, mm-hmm. and you take from it all, just like a petroleum refinery, you don't just make fuels, you make asphalt and you make plastics and chemicals. You can do that with biomass. And we haven't developed all the chemistry to do that routinely yet.
Mm-hmm.
We have many things to develop to be able to do that.
That's the voice.
But it's all opportunity.
That's the voice of Dr. Stan Bull. He's with MRI Global, based here in Kansas City. Also with us, Steve Everly from The Star. The question on the table, have the American people been a little too lax when it comes to pushing for alternative fuels? Our number, 816-235-2888. Again, 816-235-2888. Send us an email to updatedat.kcur.org or go to KCUR's Facebook page. Let's go to Guadalupe from St. Joseph. Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning. This is so exciting. I actually think this is one of the most exciting adventures or endeavors in our civilization.
Sure.
It's basically where the reinvention of fire and how to use it. But my question was, with the recent flooding, you know, and in nationwide, but particularly here in the Midwest, is the feasibility of allocating farmland that is in the floodplains for intentional flooding in order to grow the water hyacinth, the algae, you know, the fast-growing plants? I can see a twofold purpose there. For one, decontamination of the stagnant water somewhat, and there again, the biofuel. And one more thing, and I appreciate it, that it was mentioned to take all in perspective how perhaps solar and biofuels can be combined, and even petroleum products, that everything can be thrown into, you know, all one effort, and getting the best from all, and even idea of the bacteria that exist in volcanic underneath underwater volcanoes that is capable of also consuming petroleum and
right.
Converting it into hydrocarbons.
Guadalupe, why don't you hang on a second? Let me try to answer a couple of these questions here. Steve Everly, he brought up the whole idea of the potential for flooding farm fields as a way to move the ball down the field. Have you heard much talk about that?
You know, I haven't. And I think one thing that's being looked at is using land that isn't currently used for farm crops. Mm-hmm. And I think that would probably be an issue if that could be done. But, you know, it's not something I've really heard of being considered now.
Dr. Bull, Guadalupe also had a point there about combining products. Can you help him with that?
Yeah. I'm speechless. I'm not quite sure what
I'm going to ask him again here.
Was.
Guadalupe, try me again on your second question and be as brief as you can, please.
Yes. The second question is with the discovery of the bacteria that exist, that can exist in extreme temperatures and breaking down such breaking down organic matter, that combining that with the effort in biofuels.
Well, yeah, let me just say that we have had extensive species collection of natural species and to see what kind of characteristics and what kind of products you can get from them. And you're right. Some of them at high temperatures have certain characteristics and are more effective. And so you take that into account as you design the process to produce fuels from either converting chicken poop or other materials like cellulose materials. From a combination point of view, what I had said earlier was what the focus needs to be, I believe, very much more so, and we're moving that direction, by the way, is to produce products from biomass materials, whatever they may be, so that they integrate well into either a biorefinery or they can easily be integrated into the pipeline with existing petroleum products. That way, the existing infrastructure will be more easily used, and the petroleum companies with all the resources will be much more anxious to grab onto it and make use of it.
We have this question from Floyd in Kansas City. He's wondering about mosquitoes becoming a problem in the production of algae if it's grown outside. Steve, I guess it could be a problem.
Well, I guess so. Although I haven't, I think there are ways that they do it where it wouldn't be exposed. But, I haven't heard that it hadn't been at a scale yet where I think this has really been an issue that's come up.
I think this mosquitoes came before the algae.
Mosquitoes have always been here, right? Yeah,
that's right.
Let's go to Carol from Olathe. Carol, good morning. Our topic today, alternative energy. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. My question is, why can subsidies that are being given to conventional energy sources like oil and gas, why can't those subsidies be given to renewable energy sources?
Steve?
Well, they both get subsidies, renewable and fossil fuels. Renewable gets quite a bit. Some will argue they aren't getting enough, but these subsidies are available, and they've been very helpful.
Okay. That help, Carol? Thank you. Let's go to Cheryl from Lawrence. Cheryl, you're on up today. Good morning.
Hello there.
Hi.
A few years back, I read an article. It was online, and it was Hugh Downs was the guy who was, I guess he was old. Anyhow, in the mid-30s, Henry Ford was experimenting with biofuels and was really excited about a new gen that was going to take hemp production take man hours out of it like it did for cotton.
Mm-hmm.
And that, I understand, according to the article, was shut down by some of the big names like Hunt and Hurt, the paper and the DuPont, and people that did not want hemp and oil guys that didn't want hemp being used for fuel and or around for paper and clothing and other things that it can be used for. And I just wondered why that was so stepped on. Is that, and because I know as a farmer, when I used to farm out in South Central Kansas, crops like that, they're real drought resistant, and they hold soil real well, so it doesn't blow around, it's real sandy. And I just wondered if that wasn't, we talk about sustainable things.
Right.
It seems it would help the farmers and the ground and the gasoline situation.
Okay. Dr. Bull, what do you think?
I don't know of that specific instance, but I can say that we certainly have explored very extensively all known available crops and their characteristics. And, there's generally the first thing is the way to think about it, and we've already said it. Let me say it more generally, though, is the first thing to do is to look for materials that are left over, waste materials of various kinds. The chicken poop, the stalks from corn after you harvest the corn, wheat straw, and before you even think about trying to move to a cultivated crop specifically for energy. Mm-hmm. Eventually, if we get large enough, we will need to go that direction.
You know, these days, doctor, what comes first? Is it public subsidies or private subsidies to get a push behind a new technology?
Generally, we rely on public subsidies to get things underway. The risk of for private capital is way too high generally, and so. But what you really ultimately need is a combination of the two, and to give them credit, the Department of Energy is often makes funds available for the next generation demonstrations on a cost shared basis. Typically, it'll be a 50-50 cost share mm-hmm. that's required, so that there's some private risk as well as public risk.
Okay, Russ from Kansas City, Missouri. Russ, you're on Up to Date. Good morning.
Hello there. Hey, quick question about energy usage and about energy sustainability. Oil took a very, very long time to accumulate. It's basically old solar energy, but now we have a balloon payment to pay with to deal with. There's only so many acres with us building houses on some of it because we reproduce like algae. And I was wondering about, since you can't put solar cells, algae, and cultivated crops all in the same place, what does NREL, formerly SERI, and perhaps Midwest, and anybody else have on the plate concerning efficiencies that would allow us to reduce our consumption, especially with three-quarters of the world saying they want their MTV as well? I'll take my answer via the airwaves. Thank you.
Yeah, Dr. Bull?
Well, the very first place to start, really, in efficiencies is in buildings. Buildings use 40% of our energy. And so... And they're everywhere, as you know. And so – and then one of the challenges with buildings is that once you build a building, it has a long lifetime, 40, 50 at least years. And it's difficult to renovate. I've done that myself, so I had an older house and I've renovated, and I know what the challenges are there. So that's the first place, and that primarily speaks to the electricity side, as well as natural gas and other heating fuels. And then the transportation area is primarily vested in the vehicle. And we fortunately have started to move, not terribly aggressively, but toward hybrid vehicles, which increase the efficiency as well as lighter materials. And then moving ultimately to electric vehicle, which makes a lot of sense. But again, that challenge with electric vehicles is the storage battery.
Mm-hmm.
We do not have adequate storage batteries that really will make electric vehicles popular yet today. For special purposes, they can be used, but they're still going to have limited range.
Can you see?
And then it takes a long time to charge them.
Can you see electric those batteries available in 5 or 10 years?
I hope so. I put my faith in what I call nanomaterials. It's a whole new world. Nanoscale materials have different properties. And there's a lot of emphasis in that area. I believe that I'm not sure the 5-year time frame, but hopefully in the 10-year time frame, we can start to see some breakthroughs.
Andrew from Kansas City, Missouri. Good morning.
Good morning. I work for the city, and I wanted to let Dr. Bowl and listeners know we're investigating some really exciting opportunities to develop renewable energies. Kansas City was one of 23 communities around the country selected for a feasibility study to be conducted by NREL and EPA, and we're going to evaluate about 400 acres of land called the Municipal Farm. It's a former actual farm from about 1912 to 1940. The city grew produce for institutions and on this property that's southwest of the stadium complex where it sits now.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to evaluate solar development on a former landfill and potential biomass operation on former farmland. So we'll investigate those opportunities and see how we can integrate them into future development for the area. We're going through a public planning process. This is one component of it, but we're really excited by partnering with NREL and with our MRI Global partners here locally. And we'll be very excited to see where that takes us and happy to report back probably by the end of the year.
Okay, Andrew. Thanks for the report. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Steve Everly from the Star. We really haven't done much justice to solar or wind. Any great advancements in either one on a large or small scale that you've seen of late?
Well, probably the most significant thing with solar has been the price of the technology has just plummeted. A lot of that's not all good because manufacturers in the U.S. trying to produce the product are really, you know, being pressed now. But
and the prices have dropped because?
Well, because China is really a big competitor here, and they've really driven down the price. And I know for a lot of commercial businesses now, especially with some of the incentives available, tax incentives and other things, it's making a lot of sense to go solar. So that has been a big deal.
That's why we're seeing all these little thin solar chips now that seem to be working, right?
Yeah, there's a bunch of new things on there, things that almost look like tiles, you know, roofing tiles mm-hmm. you can install. So there's some different things like that. But there's a lot of installers that are really seeing a lot of business in Missouri, particularly, yeah. And that seems to really have picked up speed.
Okay. Well, we're out of time, but I want to thank you both for your time. That's Dr. Stan Bull, Director of Energy Science and Technology at MRI Global, based here in Kansas City. Dr. Bull, I sure appreciate your time today.
Quite welcome. Happy to be here.
Thanks so much. And as always, Steve Everly from The Star, thanks for your time, too.
Thank you,
Steve. Always good to have you. You can find more information about our guests, our program schedule, and podcast. It's all at kcur.org. Don't forget to follow this program on Facebook and Twitter. We're at KCUR Up to Date. Tomorrow on the program, the Navy SEAL considered to be the most lethal sniper in American military history. Plus, we'll talk about a less lethal form of defense, martial arts. Our theme music is by Bobby Watson and the UMKC Conservatory of Music Concert Jazz Band. We had help today from KCUR's Kathleen Pointer, Danny Alexander, Maria Carter, and Kim Noble. The show is produced by Steven Steigman. I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and you are up to date.